I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. I'm excited to have on the podcast Marla Taviano. And I don't know if I've ever referred to Marla by name on the podcast. Well, you'll hear her name a lot today. But she is amazing. She and her family are in Cambodia, and they've been there for how many years, Marla?
Almost three years.
And we're going to hear a little piece of that story. It's certainly not the whole story. You can read about that, but we'll find out how to connect with Marla and how to read more about what her family is doing in Cambodia and how they got there and all that kind of stuff. You can read more about that, but we're going to talk to her. She's a writer, and she's many things. She's a wife, a mom, and certainly a writer, a learner. We're going to learn more about her very cool Instagram, account. I was going to say, right?
Yes.
I was going to say account, yeah. But somehow that didn't sound right. Okay. And what I love about Marla is the grass does not grow under her feet. She's in motion. And really, I think specifically what I really appreciate about her, she is a learner, a thinker, a grower. And that's what I want to be. I think about Gordon and Gail McDonald. You know, they're close to 80 now. Always saying to me, I hate hanging around people our own age because sometimes they get stagnant and they forget they need to keep growing and changing and learning. And I want to be doing that till I die. Trust me, Marla will be doing that till she dies. So that's one of the things I love about Marla. So welcome to Faith Conversations, Marla.
Thank you so much, Anita. I'm really excited.
Well, it's good to have you. I'm going to do a little commercial work here to get all the commercials out of the way before we really dive into the conversation. But let me give a little teaser first before I get to little commercials. Today, we're going to talk about what makes you fart. Oh, yep, you heard me right, everybody.
Is this the first time you said fart on your podcast?
I guaranteed that it is. And actually, I was laying in bed last night thinking, wait a minute, there are some people that are going to listen to this that are going to just be shocked at this.
Please don't go, friends. This is not Anita's fault. I'll take all the blame.
Thank you for that, Marla. Yeah, you know, I grew up that fart was a four-letter word. Well, it is a four-letter word, but you know what I mean. It was not allowed to be spoken in my household, not until later years, and when all of a sudden my mother said it and it was okay. Funny how when mom decides to say it, you know, it becomes okay. And then my family spent, well, this is a little overstated, but spent, you know, several years buying cards that always had the word fart in it or little books. And yeah, all of a sudden when something's okay, you know, it's really okay. So yes, Marla's written a book called What Makes You Fart. And like she said, don't go anywhere because it is her fault. But we'll get into, because really the subtitle, hang on here, the subtitle, a highly scientific formula for living the life you were meant to live. And who knew you could get that out of What Makes You Fart as a subtitle? That's great. So we will dive in and talk more about this. And really, if this is one of those words that you just kind of cringe, we're not going to be saying it every other word as we get into the content. Never fear. And this is one of those podcasts you can share with your friends and tell them we made you, you know, had nothing to do with you. We just made you share it. Anyway, I love this. It's fascinating to me. And I honestly thought the book was going to be about something else until I really finally grasped what this podcast and book was going to be about. So, okay. Quick commercials. End of year. You know, we're coming up on the new year. And thank you to so many of you who have hung with me for, almost 2.5 years on the podcast. We are in year three, and who have supported the podcast, you're amazing. You can support the podcast three ways, really. You can sign up on Patreon and pledge, you know, like a 25 cents per episode or a dollar per episode for a month come out generally. And people do that, and I appreciate that. And that's the little P down, you know, the icon for the P at the bottom of my homepage, AnitaLustria.com. You can find that there. You can give via PayPal, and if you go to PayPal and want to know what, you know, how to send that or what email address, use producer@anitalustria.com. producer@anitalustria.com. And you can use a good old U.S. mail service. And you can write a check and mail it to Anita Lustria, 8 White Oak Terrace, Sarasota, Florida, 34237. 8 White Oak Terrace, Sarasota, Florida, 34237. I do have friends who are horrified I give my address out. And I say to them, I have not had anyone come stalking me. And, I mean, I think Faith Conversations listeners are pretty safe people. Okay, so there you go. Well, let's dig in. And, Marla, I've got to start by saying, what on earth, how did you come up with this title, What Makes You Fart? And I, you know, and then you started telling me this story about an uncle. You have to tell everyone this story.
Okay, so quite a few years ago, I think maybe 5 years ago, my uncle owns a dairy farm. And he lives really close to my parents. So I was with, I think, a few of my siblings. And we each had some kids at that time. And we wanted to go take the kids to see the cows getting milked. Because it's such a neat opportunity, something that you don't get to see every day. And I mentioned that to Uncle Tim when we were at the barn. I said, what time do the cows get milked? We would love to bring the kids. And he just looked at me kind of funny. He said, that's not a good idea. The cows get really excited if people come while they're being milked, and then the manure production just goes like out the roof, whatever. He said, and it messes everything up. Nobody wants cows pooping while they're being milked, and it's just a big mess. And so I said, okay, sure. And we were sitting around outside at my parents' house talking about this. And my little niece, who was a baby at the time, had just had an explosive diaper, and that got me thinking. And I don't know, it's some kind of light bulb. And I thought to myself, you know what? They get excited and stuff just starts happening like this. When I go into a bookstore or a library, I feel like I have to go to the bathroom. I always, you said we weren't going to say the word, so I always pass gas in bookstores. I'm hiding around the corner. I don't want people to come in the aisle after me. What is it? Could it be connected to these cows? And I thought, well, I know that I am never more excited than when I'm in a bookstore. I love books. I have always loved books. And I started thinking about it. I opened my mouth. I said to my sister, my brothers-in-law, and we started talking about what makes us fart. And for one, it was the outdoors. He loves being outdoors. For one, it was coffee shops. He just loves coffee. For me, it's the bookstore. And I thought, there is something to this. And I wrote a blog post about it. Everybody chimed in. It was kind of fun. But it wasn't until maybe a couple years ago that I started gathering information, not just about the gastrointestinal system, but I've always had a passion for helping people discover what they love to do, discover what their passion is. And I thought, okay, I know it's silly to say what makes you fart is your passion, but it is for me and it is for other people. And it's not a foolproof way, like this subtitle I have about the highly scientific formula. No, that is a falsehood right on the cover of my book. But there is something to it, and it is that whole, when you are in a relaxed, happy state, your body just acts naturally and does the things it's supposed to do. Kind of the reverse of that, when you are constipated and you're everything's all messed up inside because you are, something's wrong. You're not in your happy, your sweet spot, your happy place, your zone, the element, whatever you want to call it. I just happen to call it the fart zone. What makes you fart? That's where you know that what you are doing is what you are meant to do.
What a hoot. Okay, to find out, to get this, you know, this is what's behind the name of the book, which I'll say people can find it at a link at anitalustria.com, but it's a ebook only. Is that true? Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is
being
great.
Being in Cambodia, it's tricky to figure out how to print books and all of that and put them in people's hands. So, I mean, if it sells like millions of copies, I might consider going to print. But in the meantime,
it's an ebook. And Best place to find it on Amazon, my guess is. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Great.
I'm not sure if it's on iTunes yet. It will be. It was supposed to release the day after Christmas, but we got a head start on that. So it's
Well, day after Christmas is a Monday, right? Yes. And in fact, Tuesday. This is the day after Christmas.
There you go.
This podcast releases the day after Christmas. So funny how that all works. Yeah. Okay. I thought you'd appreciate that. So yeah, you can find it there and in any of those places that Marla just mentioned, and also a link on my homepage where most of you know where that is. Hey, you mentioned, and before we really get deeper into the content, because I think most of us kind of perk up when we start reading about, hearing about, talking about what makes us tick. And I think there are a lot of people, Marla, that don't know and don't know how to discover that. I think sometimes we're not good dreamers or, you know, maybe haven't been taught that as we've grown up, either in the particular schools that we were a part of or home structure that we were a part of. It wasn't something that was elevated for us to kind of figure out how God wired us and what gets us excited. So that's one of the reasons I appreciate what you're writing about. But let's step back a little bit, because something that got you and your family really excited was making this move to Cambodia. You've been there 3 years or right around. Talk a little bit about that and how you got to Cambodia and starting to zero in on your own sweet spot as you got there.
Yeah, it's a long story. So
you can give the
I remember the first time that you and I met in person was right around the time when I had been to Cambodia on a visit. We thought we were going to move there, but my husband had a heart attack and he's fine. He survived that, but had a lot of panic and anxiety after that, which kind of derailed our plans. And I talk about this in the book, but a woman came up to me once, because I was an author and a speaker in my former life. I still write books, but it's mostly self-published ebooks. But during this really, really hard time in our lives, when we wanted to be in Cambodia and we couldn't be, I was going around still trying to earn money at speaking events because my husband had lost his job, couldn't hold a job. We lost our house. And a woman came up to me because after I was done talking, I had things planned to share, but what really ultimately came out then was me crying and saying, this is our right now story. This is what's going on in our lives. We don't know. We thought we were called to Cambodia, and this is happening instead. And just pouring my heart out in front of these women. And every time, I mean, they would cry. They would come up to me. It turned out to be for the best, obviously. But one woman came up to me and said, I would go through hell to have a calling like yours.
Wow.
Said. And I thought, I kind of had to hold back, because in my mind, that's what it felt like I was going through. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's easy for you to say, honey.
Yeah, sure.
You see that I have this dream and vision, and you want that, and I get that. But what I'm going through to get there is something I wouldn't wish on anyone. But what I have come to find out, and this is kind of a roundabout answer to your question, is for someone who doesn't know what they love or what they want to do, I think part of the thing is we have been so scared and wanted to feel so safe and been afraid of any kind of risk or any bad things happening, that when we protect ourselves like that and insulate ourselves and work so hard to make sure that nothing goes wrong, then those dreams are on the other side of that. And we aren't ever going to know what they are. We're not going to know how to reach them. We're not going to know. Where I'm at right now, while it's not perfect and there are still bumps in the road and hard things, it is on the other side of something that this lady was calling hell, and that's what it felt like. And I couldn't be where I am without it. I really, really couldn't. So you ask what we're doing in Cambodia. We made it there after 3 years. Didn't have a plan, started learning the language, decided after 9 months we were asked to help start a center for kids who were at risk. We moved to another city, a six-hour bus ride away from where we had lived for the first year we lived in Cambodia. And we did this, and for 5 months, and we came back to the States to raise some money for the organization. And while we were in the States, we got fired. So that was not a part of our plan. Didn't understand why God would bring us all the way to Cambodia for that to happen. Got back to Cambodia again with no plan and started working almost immediately, which might have been a mistake. Our pastor warned us to take our time and to grieve first, but we're thinking to ourselves, at least I was, hey, we're supposed to be, quote, missionaries over here. We can't sit and wait around. We have people counting on us that we have, this is urgent. So we joined up with another, this time was a church, and something different, but also kind of similar ended up happening a few months later. And we found ourselves feeling very hurt and betrayed for the second time in less than a year. And we're still not all the way over these things. I still have to work on forgiving people. But out of that came something that I would say, if I had known this was even a thing, I would have been passing gas long ago about this. But long story short, we are now building bamboo libraries out in villages in Cambodia. So those bookstores and libraries that get me going that they don't have here in Cambodia, now there are four of them, with number five on the way, out in remote villages with no electricity. They are filled with books in both Cambodian and English. We have English classes starting. We have village chiefs knocking on our proverbial door and saying, can we have a library in our village? And this all came about because we moved to this city because of an organization that fired us. The woman who is running the show is doing it in her free time, and she worked and still works at that with that organization that we worked with. So we are this. It's crazy. It never, ever, ever, ever could have happened without everything that happened on the way. And I wouldn't trade it for anything, but it was not any fun. It was not fun at all. But I really believe that anybody who is going to chase a dream, and you know this, Anita, you've been through all kinds of stuff, and if you're going to chase a dream, it's going to come on the other side of some really, really, really hard life.
Yeah. The ups and downs that, you know, the hills you climb and the valleys that you kind of recover in and languish in are a part of that process generally. And yeah, it's not very many that I've talked to that just kind of walk the path and don't trip on some boulders along the way and just, you know, walk a smooth path. And I, you know, we've just come through the Advent and Christmas season, and you know, we know the Jesus path, at least his path to getting here to the earth. And, you know, and all of those, I just think of an Advent devotional that I went through moving toward and through the Christmas season. All of the people, and specifically the women in the line of David, in the line of Jesus, really, and not an easy life. You start looking at, you know, Rahab and Ruth and Tamar and Mary. I think that was an easy life. An angel coming and, you know, all of this stuff. So we're in good company. All that to say, we're in really good company, right? Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, we're in great company. So thanks for that thumbnail sketch. I wanted people to get to know your background a little bit. And also to realize that no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing, you know, God is always at work. We have to have our eyes open. We have to have our eyes wide open, looking, asking, seeking, all this kind of stuff. But I mean, he, in due time, he does answer, and often not in the way we expected. You know, you had no idea the bamboo libraries were going to open up, and this was going to be the big thing that you've come to Cambodia to do. Who knew, right? So I love the story about your uncle and about the cows, because that gives us an idea of, you know, taking a look at our sweet spot. What is it that gets us excited? What is it, that actually makes us pass gas? Okay. Let's move forward. I would love to have you talk to that person that, you know, really sits there maybe in front of you and says, yeah, Marla, but I don't have a dream. I mean, I think a lot of us really think that that's true. It's just that we've not uncovered it yet. But somebody's sitting there and going, I have no idea. I hear you talking, and I'm really glad for you that you're doing the bamboo libraries, that you're writing books. But what do you say to that person?
I think this is tricky because what I talk about in the book, when I say there's this highly scientific formula, I think what we want is we want a formula. We want do this, this, and this. You'll find what your dream is, and then this is how you'll go chase it. And I think one of the things we need to think about when we talk about tripping over those boulders and going through those hard times, I think sometimes the dream doesn't come to us until we are the person we need to be to live the dream. So for me, the ultimate dream was the Bamboo Libraries, but that was not something I had in my head. Now, I made my bedroom into a library when I was a kid with the card catalog and everything.
I
worked
it.
In the school library when I was in fifth grade, but I never, ever, ever imagined that I would be helping build bamboo libraries in Cambodia. This is not a dream that I could see. It did not even occur to me. So for me, at least, this was something that I didn't see it off in the future for 10 years and make my way toward it. I didn't know what it was. I had other smaller dreams or little things that I wanted to do. Moving to Cambodia is not small, but it wasn't move to Cambodia to start libraries. So I feel like sometimes if you don't know what your dream is, take a step in some direction. If it's the wrong direction, which I don't believe it will be, I don't believe there are wrong directions necessarily as much as just curving, winding paths to get to where God wants you to go. And so just start walking. If I would have known about the bamboo libraries and tried to go straight there, I wouldn't have made it straight there anyway. I would have kept curving on this path. So just taking a step. And I don't think we have to make it bigger than it is. It doesn't have to be something you leave your job to go do. It doesn't have to be something that changes the whole entire world. It's in you. It, like you said, that uncovering that treasure. A book I recently read is called Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. And she is all about that treasure already being inside of you, and you just uncover it. You just dig down deep and get it. Because when you were created, what you love to do is a part of you already. It's already in your DNA. I mean, what I do encourage people to do is go back to your childhood, dig down deep and see what you love to do before the world came along and said, you can't do that.
Before the world sucked the life out of you. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we, our family, we unschool our girls, which is a totally different topic. But part of that reason is that we feel like sitting in school all day long and doing things that don't really necessarily involve what you love to do can kind of take up all your time and energy and suck, like you said, suck the passion out of you. And so if we could go back to when we were kids, what did we love? And people ask me that. Did you always love books and reading and writing? Yes. Now, some things, I loved kittens. Love kittens. Do not love kittens now. Not at all. I loved baseball. Would listen to games on the radio and keep score. I do not love baseball now. I collected bunnies. Just random stickers. Things like that. Not every childhood love is going to end up being your passion. But we're multifaceted people. We have a lot of things we love. Even now, the bamboo libraries are not my sole passion. They are a passion. There are many, many, many things, like you said, maybe too many, maybe I can't sit still, but we don't have to put all our eggs in one basket. We don't have to say, what's this one big thing in my life that I might miss out on?
Yeah.
What did you love to do before? What do you love now? If you didn't have the pressure of it being a passion, like people would say, could I make eating my passion? Could I make watching Netflix a passion? somehow, maybe, if we can get to figuring out what that could be.
Yeah, what the underlying reason behind that is, you know, yeah. And I think what's interesting about this is it does take some self-discovery. I think sometimes if we've not been encouraged to dream or encouraged toward the growth path, there is an element of this where we need to know a bit about how we're wired. And so, speaking about passions, to enter into the forefront of some of my passions, yours and mine overlap a bit. I love seeing people become better versions of themselves, or the best version, or get better at what it is that they want to do and are doing. And so one of the things that I do is I'm a media coach. I help, help coach people who've written books and are about to go interview on radio and television. I want them to be able to deliver their message well, because that message is a passion. If they can't get that message out there well, then, you know, nothing's gonna happen. I mean, that when you want your message out there, you have to be able to deliver it. So that's, you know, one of my passions. But a piece of that, taking that a little bit further back, is knowing who I am and how I'm wired. And another piece of my passion is encouraging other people to, you know, either find out who they are on the Enneagram or Myers-Briggs or something, so that they can get to know who they are better. I think once we know ourselves a little bit more fully, with some breadth and depth, not just the skin deep piece that I like ice cream, but then we can start to figure out some of the deeper passions that lie within us. And a part of that is kind of knowing how God has wired us, and then some of that stuff can start bubbling to the surface. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And the Enneagram, which is fairly new to me, it shouldn't be, because it took about 10 of my friends telling me about it before I decided to take a look at it. And that has been so freeing for me. I am a 1 on the Enneagram, and I think the biggest thing for me has been the fact that I can see the healthy me, the average me, and the unhealthy me. And it's not about, when I first found out I was a 1, I was like, shoot, I do not want to be this number. This is some bad stuff. And yes, the unhealthy one is a very, not very nice person.
of course, the unhealthy anyone is not a very nice person, right? Yeah. Yeah.
But it's definitely shown me it's okay. This is how you were created. This is what you were meant to be. You've just got to figure out how to work on those weaknesses, turn them into strengths. And that's what I tell people when they come to me and say, this is my weakness, this is my weakness, this is why I can't do this. And I say, okay, how can you take that and look at that as a strength? That thing that right now is a weakness, yes, maybe that's a part of you, but it could be a healthy, good part of you. I get myself into trouble with my big, grand ideas of how the world should run and how things that people should believe. And what I have learned how to do, in part because of the reading about the Enneagram, is instead of getting furious at the world for not listening to what I believe is truth, and hey, I'm a prophetic voice and you listen to me, I have found calmer, gentler ways to come alongside people and help bring them along. You mentioned the Instagram account. I have a new account that I started called White Girl Learning, and it's I'm posting 3 times a week, and it's that's doable for me. I've read so many books this year by people of color, and I've been trying to share them with people and kind of trying to force them to read these books. They don't want to be forced to read the books, but now I've discovered a way to take gorgeous pictures of these books, to put some quotes about the books, get other people excited about it. I'm following a lot of different authors of color and people who post about books that have been written by authors of color. And it's only just started. I've only had 7 posts so far, but I get so excited every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to post this new thing and to talk about it and to see where those conversations go. And so I need to share positively and in a loving way, in a helpful way, in a slower way. And learning about myself and figuring out how to get my message across, kind of like you're saying, in a way that people can hear it, that they will receive it. And just like me, when I didn't want anything to do with the Enneagram until enough people told me, mm-hmm. I have to be patient with other people too. It takes a while for us to hear and to change our minds.
Well, and isn't it interesting? It's like, I think the people that need to hear will hear it at the right time because there's that divine spark that's a part of all of this. And, you know, God opens our ears when he opens our ears, opens our eyes when he opens our eyes. And, you know, I mean, I can look back to times in my life and I think, oh, God, really? Did you not take the scales off before now or before, you know, whenever? And I think the patience factor, it's easy for us to be impatient with ourselves and certainly impatient with others. And to set that aside and go, no, I'm gonna lean into what you've called me to do, that thing that excites me, that passion that has bubbled up in me, and, you know, you're going to have to do the rest of the work in people. You know, they're going to see it or not see it, but that's not my biz. My biz is just doing the next thing that I'm called to do, being faithful to the Instagram account, White Girl Learning, just putting it out there and then letting you just, you know, wash that message over people until you're ready for their eyes to open.
I just was reading in a book last night. The book is called One by Deidre Riggs, and she talked about grace. I don't have the exact quote, but something about grace being us being willing to give God the space to work in somebody's life. And I was expecting this book to just be about Black people and white people getting along, and I was kind of excited because I think I've got that down. But, oh, there, you have the book.
I do.
And I, it turned out that it was about that, but it was very much about forgiving people who have wronged you, who have hurt you. Besides the people I've already mentioned, there's some people even closer to me this year that have really, really hurt me. And it has come about because of some very strong differences of opinions, and I've hurt them back. And it just, that really spoke to me last night, that giving God the space to work in someone's life. And so offer the apologies, do what you need to do, but then step back and say, like you said, okay, God, this is you. You have got this. I'm not going to mm-hmm. barge in anymore, which is something I'm really good at, stepping back, well, giving God space.
How old are you?
I'm 42.
Yeah, so 42. I'm 57. I've got a few more years on the treadmill of my life than you do. And I think it's interesting. I mean, there is such beauty with age. Like, are you kidding me? I would not give back any gray hair or any wrinkle. Forget it. It's like hard fought, hard earned. You know, that's like my, it says that maybe I have a little wisdom to offer, maybe. So I'm not giving that stuff away. But it's, I think one of the things that I see the further down the path, the life journey that I walk, is it's so much more about me walking that journey than the effect I presume to have, hope to have, might have on anyone else. It's so much more about my personal transformation in my relationship with Christ. If there's spillover, woohoo, you know, you love that and it's great, but I can't cause any of the spillover. It's, you know, that's, again, it's that holding our lives in an open-handed way. And I'll say to parents, and you're a great example of this, Marla, holding our kids in an open-handed way. You know, you can model good things and have great conversations, but in the end, they're these separate sentient beings that will make their own choices, and we cannot force or make anything happen there. you know, so it's interesting. It's it all comes down in the end. We have to focus on ourselves, and I mean that in the healthiest sense of that, not a self-indulgent sense, but you know, God, this is about me. Oh, forgive me. Help me forgive others. Help, you know, where it's the personal growth path, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and it kind of goes along with when we try to figure out what we this great big thing we should do with our lives. At the very beginning of my ebook, and I'll probably get this quote a little bit wrong, I think it's Howard Thurman that said, "Don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive, because what the world needs is more people who have come alive." And that is what I would love people to know. That's why I put it at the beginning of the book, is because we can go out there looking for ways we can help people. And part of me thinks that's what we did when we came to Cambodia, is we so desperately wanted to help people. And we just tried so hard to do that. And that's fine. But I can't help but wonder if I wouldn't have done it a little bit differently. Like I said, I wouldn't be here now if I had. But finding out what makes me come alive, and then that's what the world needs, is me alive, doing what I love. And now kids in the village are learning how to read and getting an education. And that I am on fire passionate about. So just figuring out what is it about me? Who am I? What does make me come alive? And a person who has come alive, no matter what they're passionate about, they are just a contagious person. Like, they're so, you love to be around people who are alive. Yeah. We just really, really, really do. So,
well, and I'm just thinking, I love that you sharing that piece of your story, but I would even go back and venture to say that while you maybe hadn't found that single kernel or that piece that you're doing now, the bamboo libraries, that you're saying yes and making the cross world move to Cambodia indeed spoke volumes to a ton of us. It's like, look at the Tavianos. Oh yeah, okay, they're just risking all and making this move. It didn't even matter what you were doing in some ways early on, I think. Just the model to the world of, all right, we're doing this, and yep, kind of selling all, not kind of, selling all and making this move, you know? So I think it's fascinating. We don't even know sometimes what our actions speak, how they speak, what it is, the kernel that people walk away from us with in the conversation we have so many times is not even the point of what it is we were talking about. It's something else, but there's something that they're walking away with that they're seeing. And I think a lot of that is just that willingness. It's like, yep, surrendering all here, doing this, and here we are, and we don't even hardly know why. But it's amazing to me how God uses our not knowing for the greater good.
And we have been, I mean, we've been so encouraged by so many people. And usually when people will tell me, oh, you made such a sacrifice, I could never do what you do or whatever, I don't always handle it the best way. Sometimes I do. I do get a little bit annoyed with people who might say something like, oh, I could never, or da 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 da. And I think, you know what, just do it. I mean, just do something. Risk, that's what risk is. Donald Miller, in his book, A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, one of my favorite quotes is that joy costs pain, is what he says. And I write about this a lot in the ebook, that book is one of, I made myself pick one book that makes me fart the most, and that was the one that I chose, because the premise of this book that he wrote was, he had written another book, and there were movie producers who wanted to make a movie out of the book. And when they came to meet with him, he was really excited about this. And then he was floored when they said to him, okay, we're going to need to add a bunch of stuff to your life that's not real. And he said, what do you mean? And they said, well, your real life is not exciting enough for a movie. And he's like, what? And so then the whole point of this Million Miles in a Thousand Years book is, why am I living a life that's not exciting enough for a movie? Like, why? And not like you have to just throw everything to the wind and run off and leave your family or none of that. But what is it about this safe little life that has nothing, and there's always something we can do to move in that direction. Go visit a neighbor that you've never met. Introduce yourself and take a plate of cookies or something. And you think, oh no, I don't know them. What if they're gluten-free? What if this? What if that? Well, take a risk. Who knows? Like, do something that you might get rejected, or this might happen. Give away more money than you can afford and see what happens. Do without this one thing. Go, I don't know. I don't know what it is for you, but you won't come alive until you are, I don't even know how to say it. Huh. I do know that when my husband went through this time of anxiety and panic, and the thing that he would do to calm himself down was to numb himself by playing games on his phone. He would do this for hours at a time because it was the only thing that stopped him from his heart racing and feeling like he was having a repeat heart attack. And what we came to discover over time was he was numb now to the pain, but he was also numb to everything that had ever given him joy. Mm. He didn't do photography. He didn't want to get together with his friends. There was not really much intimacy in our marriage. You couldn't numb the hard stuff without numbing the good stuff. And so I try to tell people that don't numb that. Of course you don't want to feel horrible. Of course we want to try to make things not hurt. But sometimes you got to lean into those things and push through them.
Joy costs pain. Joy costs pain. It's a great quote.
Really? It really does. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that will help people is, I mean, all of $2.99, I think that's what the book costs. What Makes You Fart? You can download it for a very inexpensive cost. A highly scientific formula for discovering the life you are meant to live. And just put one foot in front of the other. I love your thoughts and you know, just take a plate of cookies to a neighbor too. You know, right. We will not discover unless we, you know, pick up and do something. I also, you know, I thought you were really kind there when people are saying, I can't move halfway across the world. I admire you. It's amazing. I would be sitting there going, then support me financially. I'd be struggling to not say that, because you do need financial support. You know, you don't move halfway across the world and get these bamboo libraries going. And I know, seriously, I know the life of people who pick up and do what you're doing. And people get excited and support for a while, and then support drops off, and you're constantly looking to renew and engage people to continue to support, you know, what God has called you to do. So I'm giving you a little plug there as well. Best way for people to connect with you. Obviously, they can download your latest ebook, What Makes You Fart, and you've got other books. They can search your name online on Amazon. What's the best way for people to connect with you? Is it Facebook? Is it Instagram? Is it a website? You tell us here, and I'll write it down and I'll post it all at AnitaLustria.com.
Okay. Yes. My website is MarlaTaviano.com. But I've actually taken a step back from blogging there because I've realized, going along with meeting my people where they are,
yes,
my people are on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. So I am all those places too.
Instagram, give the name of that new account again.
The new account is White Girl Learning. Mm-hmm. And then I have my name, Marla Taviano, which is where I put all the personal stuff and bamboo library stuff. And then I have one called, we haven't talked about this yet, but it's called Whole Farted, as in WHOLEFARTED, which is a play on wholehearted, actually. This ebook is going to be one of a trilogy, and I'm calling it the Whole Farted Trilogy. I'm hoping to do, have some kind of community. So on Instagram, and then also a Whole Farted community on Facebook, where we can get together and talk about dreams. I'd love to do some kind of informal dream coaching where we go through and say, I mean, I can't devote personal time to everyone, but just really, really helping people and connecting them with other people who are already following their dreams. So on the Instagram account, I follow on that Whole Farted account just only people who are pursuing their dream in some way, who are artists in some way. And that's another thing. I think we have the idea that only a few people are artists and the rest of the people aren't creative. And that's something that I would like to nip in the bud.
Good.
Because we're all creative in so many different ways. Some people are creative at planning birthday parties. Some are creative in their garden. Some are creative in the way they send sweet messages to people. There are so many ways to be creative. It's inside of us, and I just want people to know.
Yeah, good.
That manifests itself in so many different ways.
I couldn't agree more. And then on Twitter, you're at Marla Taviano, right?
Yes, Twitter is the place you come if you want to know what I really think about things. I started a Twitter account many, many years ago and then thought to myself, why am I here? I don't like 140 characters. I like many, many, many words.
Of course, now it's more. What is it, 280, right? Doubled?
Yes.
It's hard to get used to that. Yeah.
I rediscovered Twitter right around the time of the 2016 election, and that is more of a safe place for me to go and read about things that I care about, things that I believe in, and to feel like I'm not alone in my opinions and beliefs and values that have shifted and changed over time. So if you want the sweet, kind, well, I'm not mean on the other Twitter. I just, I'm more like, just say it how it is there.
Oh yeah. What's your other Twitter?
I don't have another Twitter.
Oh, that's the only one. You meant Instagram.
Instagram, Facebook.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Very good. Well, Marla, this is great. I mean, I love technology. Here you are in Cambodia. It's morning for me, night for you, but here we are. I love it. And Marla's latest book, What Makes You Fart, A Highly Scientific Formula for Discovering the Life You Were Meant to Live. Couldn't be a longer subtitle. Discover your passion. Download the book and, you know, think about this stuff. Some of you have some time off here around the holidays. Do it. Good time to be thinking and dreaming. And so appreciate you, who you are, who you're becoming. Love following you in all of these different, social media platforms. So thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much, Anita. It was fun.
Thanks. And to everyone else, I just say keep the conversation going.